Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Will Harris, and today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah.
That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
That cat is high. Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte.
Man, I wouldn't lie.
I don't know if you're feeling the same way that I'm feeling right now, but this whole last week has been the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, and it's definitely showing on the faces of a lot of bartenders, brand ambassadors, spirits, industry people, and gotta say, now this has been about, I guess it's been about 3 years in the making, or rather, 3 years running now, and what a crazy, crazy thing to do. I mean, we've had, well, coming up this year is Tales of the Cocktail. It's 10th year, actually, which is quite a feat. And it's actually a pretty cool thing for us to be able to have such an amazing platform to speak about the industry that we love so much and about... Not only, you know, obviously there are a lot of like brands that are sponsoring, and God bless them, you know, for doing this and being supportive of the whole industry. Also, along with the different speakers and great minds that come in and give seminars and just enrich our whole industry. And to see this happening in Manhattan, you know, obviously Tales of the Cocktail being held every year in New Orleans, to have it happen in Manhattan, you know, the birthplace, really, in my opinion, of classic cocktails, is such an kind of like a no-brainer. And so this year at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, some of the things that we saw were just outrageous feats of some of the most influential bartenders and thinkers in the industry. We had so many things going on, like cocktail competitions. Last week we had Ivy Mix, Claire Burton Lang, and Lynette Marrero on talking about Speed Rack, which is an amazing competition, and it was quite an amazing thing to do, to have just so many talented ladies in the industry coming on and competing and just rocking it out. And then with another competition, Rematch Biatch, which is the international Rematch Biatch. Steve Schneider, man, what a fucking beast.
81 seconds.
81 seconds to make, what, 10 drinks?
Yeah.
And speaking of rocking it out, we got Rocky Ye from Seattle. We don't really talk about Seattle much on this show.
Why not?
Well, because you haven't been on yet.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Rocky just walked into the studio, and I'm very glad to have him here. He's someone who I met about, 2 years ago or so?
Yeah, two and a half years ago.
It was about it was the time that the Frankie's Cookbook came out. They were on tour, and you met them during that.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about it last night.
Yeah, they came to Seattle, and by sheer cosmic coincidence, my travel schedule messed up with theirs perfectly for the whole week going down the West Coast. I don't know if it was a match made in heaven or a match made in, like, you know, my liver's hell. But it was fantastic, you know, just meeting those guys and being hang out with them.
Absolutely. Well, they're fun guys to be around. And we won't go into too much detail about those guys. They should have a show of their own. Yeah, I was just... thank you for coming in. A little late, but that's
sorry. Great. getting out of Midtown was hellish.
Yeah, I've heard many accounts from just like the last 30 minutes about traffic and whatnot. But I'm glad that you made it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. So, Rocky, how did you enjoy the MCC?
MCC was great, as always. You know, definitely glad that last night was the last night of it all.
I think a lot of people are right there in the same thought process with you. Yeah. The anti-gala, which was last night.
Right.
Where we last hung out. Which I'm glad we've gotten to hang out a lot this last week.
Me too.
But yeah, it was. I was like, man, should I go to this? Probably not, but I have to.
It's always one of those things where you're like, oh, one more. Okay, I could do this. I could do this. Especially since Tobin always puts on such a great party. And so Tobin Ellis, you know, obviously he, you know, put it together this time around. And every time he and his crew get together and they put on an event, you know, you're guaranteed to have a good time. You're guaranteed to probably wake up with a headache.
Yeah. I think my last image of him from the night was, was he standing on top of a car with a bullhorn?
It just seemed that way. You know, but he's definitely being very passionate about what he was saying at that point.
Yeah, he was. He had a like a Lizard King moment there, I think.
Oh, totally.
Rocky, tell us about what you do, man.
So, you know, I am portfolio ambassador for Proof ABV. You know, we are in the business of helping smaller brands grow and develop. And then I'm also a spirits portfolio ambassador for American Northwest Spirits up in Washington State, not D.C., since I've been told that while I've been out here that I actually need to make that distinction. And... you know, so we're a smaller distributor. We do wine, beer, and spirits. And we're making the transition from being a control state over to now a private market. And it's definitely been very interesting and very much... there are challenges. There have definitely been challenges. It's kind of one of those be careful what you wish for moments.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, now that the state is out, you know, is obviously no longer in control, and we control our own destiny now. It's like, great, awesome. Oh, wait. All the screw-ups are mine. You know, I can't say, yeah, the state did that one. You know, and before, that was, you know, it's like, why can't I get this? The state forgot to order it. Now it's like, why can't I get this? I forgot to order it.
Let's talk a little bit about the challenges of that. I mean, like, with, especially for listeners that don't know about it, like, there are certain states that are state, the liquor is actually state controlled. So they're in charge of ordering different spirits, and you have to go through certain channels to actually, you have to go to certain places to even get it.
Correct.
Specifically, like, for even for bars, you know, like, where we can, here in New York State, you know, we can order from distributors, and we do.
Right.
Especially in New York, we're kind of spoiled because we get like everything.
You not only get everything, you get everything first.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even while you get some things while it's still just like a twinkle in someone's eye sometimes, I swear. Yeah. And she's like, go, oh man, that's just, all right. You know, so usually we fire up, you know, some store here, you know, whether like we'll go to Astor, we'll go to Drink Up New York and be like, okay, how do we get our hands on some so we can at least we can try a little bit before, you know, before, I mean, otherwise it'll take oftentimes just takes forever to get used to get forever to get out there to us. And now, you know, hopefully a lot of that will change now, too, as well, as we get away from being a control state. So for us in Washington, the way it was there was only 167 state run stores and then about an equal number of private contract stores that were under contract to the state, but functioning within the state system. And so the state was the sole purchaser of all spirits. So anytime you wanted anything that wasn't, you know, just a regularly listed item, you know, that you would just really expect to have in any liquor store, like, you know, every liquor store, every bar, you know, is going to have, you know, like, you know, Jim Beam or Jack Daniels, you know, Smirnoff, whatever, like things like that. It's like, yes, that's easy to get, you know, but then anything even remotely esoteric, I mean, and sometimes when I say esoteric, I don't really mean anything that much, you know, out of the blue. It's like, last year we ran out of Aperol for 3 months for the whole state of Washington, you know, and it was just the purchasers there. It was not a regularly listed item, but it was something that they did know to bring in, you know, theoretically, a decent amount of, but they kind of looked at their purchasing as an entire yearly cycle instead of, hey, in the summer people drink more Aperol. And so we ran out for 3 months, like in the middle of the summer when people are drinking more Aperol.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
Aperol spritzes, whatnot. I mean, like, but isn't that kind of a testament to what's going on with the, like the bar scene, the cocktail movement? I mean, like, you know, 4 years ago, like, absolutely, Rittenhouse was in huge abundance on the shelves.
Right.
And no one knew who, like, what it was.
Exactly. Now you have to hoard it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everyone knows, oh, okay, as soon as the next release of Rittenhouse is out, it's like, I need to go buy 10 cases.
Exactly.
Stash it away, because when it runs out, and it's going to run out in a couple months, then I'll actually have a little bit set aside, you know?
Yeah.
And
same thing with the Angostura drought.
Right. As soon as that happened, I ran out to every Safeway. Because I was like, where will everyone not think to go? Oh, the grocery store.
Exactly.
So I went and cleaned out every Safeway in like a 10-mile radius of my house.
I called and emailed people all over the United States. And I was like, hey, man, can you do me a favor? Can you just go out and buy like all of the Angostura bitters you can find and just ship it to me?
Right.
You know, now I have
a ton.
Shitload.
Yeah.
Which is a great problem to have.
Right. You know, I mean, especially given, you know, our propensity now to actually have shots of Angostura in the morning. Right. I mean, my God. That's also something that, you know, it's like, you know, who knew that we would actually go back to using stomach bitters as stomach bitters instead of just flavoring. And it's like, I love that, actually. You know, it's kind of like come full circle.
And especially on the creative side, which we're going to take a break. And when we get back, I want to talk about the challenges involved with not only state-run liquor stores and that whole system, but also the creativity that comes out of it. And we'll be back in just a moment with Rocky.
White Oak Pastures is a 146-year-old, multi-generational family farm that works in cooperation with nature to produce artisan meat that is safe, healthy, nutritious, and good to eat. Without fail, we ensure that our production practices are economically practical, ecologically sustainable, and that the animals are always humanely treated. We never falter in our determination to conduct our business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
And we're back. We're in the studio with Rocky, man. We've been talking about not only the MCC, but talking more specifically about the Washington State state-run liquor stores, which is now changing over.
Right. And, you know, there have always been, within that system, as long as you worked within the system, like, you know, you could eventually get everything that you wanted. It just took a while. And everyone came to know which stores were the ones to go to. Within Seattle proper itself, you know, it came down to a matter of four stores that everyone who was really serious about cocktails and spirits, like, we all went to those stores. And it got to the point, we didn't even call them by their names. We just, like, by their number. Oh, yeah, Rittenhouse, there's a case at store 101, you know, or at store 46. And it's like, wow, you know, it just – and the thing too is that for all that, you know, we might talk about like, oh, it's a government run system and, you know, so the employees there aren't necessarily going to care. You know, that wasn't necessarily true. Like there were at those self same stores, like there were always, you know, staffers and managers who really cared and were really into it. And they were really on our side, you know, for as much as they could
fight the good fight.
Right. You know, helping us, you know, to go out and find, you know, it's like, I remember I spent like a year and a half trying to get rum Clement, you know, and rum jam into Washington State, like just begging Ben Jones. I was like, please, can I get some rum? You know?
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, because I went to Tails and just fell in love with rum Agricole. And, you know, and eventually, you know, with enough persistence, like, we got it. It's like, yay, it's on the shelf. Now we can, you know, now we can drink it. And that was also one of the challenges, though. Like, once I moved over to the sales, you know, and representation side, was that it's like, okay, I have something. I finally got it into the state, you know, and I got one of the store managers to help me out, you know, to bring in a few cases, you know, to prime the pump. But then how do you get that word out to everyone?
Yeah, how do you keep it around? Like, right. if it's not selling, then they're not going to keep it around.
Right.
So you got to get the word out, of course.
I mean, because they have to justify, you know, what they're ordering back to the state. You know,
sure.
They can't just go nuts and say, yeah, you know, I'll take 40 cases of Pappy. It might, well, I mean, if you could take,
dude, get 40. I would take 40 cases right. of Pappy if I could get it.
You're right. Bad example. But
like Grand Classico.
Right. Exactly. You know, I love Grand Classico, but. How
not
much
everyone knows? Yeah,
exactly.
How much are you going to sell?
Yeah. You know, how fast are you going to go through it? So it always became this like fine balancing act and this challenge of like, okay, you know, the term like dancing with a grizzly bear, you know, comes to mind. It's like, yeah, here's this big thing, and if you maneuver it right and you play with its rules, you know, it dances with you. You know, it won't kill you or anything, but if you make it mad, you know, just quick swipe to the head and you're dead.
Yeah.
And there were definitely days that when we just sit there and be like, oh, come on, for the love of God, please. All I'm asking for is one case. You know, please bring in one case. And it was never, again, it was never like the store manager. It was like, it was dealing with, you know, this bureaucracy that was just looking at it from a pure number standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, so as we transitioned away from that, and honestly, the hardest part of this transition has been the incredibly short timeline. Like, we're literally taking a $1.2 billion industry, you know, just in the state of Washington, and transitioning from control to private liquor in 6 months. Like, wow. I can't even, you know, I'm just impressed that we haven't torn out all our hair. Actually, I'm impressed that I'm here and not there tearing out my hair.
Totally.
But,
speaking of the challenges of that, like, as far as like a bartender standpoint, like, mm-hmm. I remember reading an article in Imbibe or might have been like Bon Appetit or one of about these bartenders. Or it was basically like recipes from bartenders in not only control states, but states in like the Midwest, you know, like in, you know, Gary, Indiana, or, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, you know, like wherever. And they couldn't get a hold of, like, for instance, like House Alpine's products, like
right.
Creme de Violette or, you know, whatever. And so they would end up making their own stuff. And did you feel like that was like something that was happening in Seattle, in Washington State? You
know? It happened to a certain extent, but what also happened was there was a lot of, hey, who's going to New York, LA, San Francisco?
You'll pick up a bottle.
Pick up a bottle, please. You know,
totally.
Bring it back in your luggage.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, a lot of that went on.
Yeah, we're not going to get Havana Club anytime soon, but
exactly.
anytime we travel.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah. for us, it's easy being, you know, close to the Canadian border. We just
sure.
run up to Vancouver. I'm like, yay, Havana Club, you know. And so that... So some things sometimes worked out in our favor. We're like, hey, cool. I can get my hands on as much Havana Club as I want. Because the guys from Vancouver, the bartenders in Vancouver, actually have an even harder time of it than we did in Washington. So British Columbia, you know, most of Canada is control.
Mm-hmm.
British Columbia, which is, you know, being immediately north of us, has an even harder system to get, you know, the specialty spirits and any ingredients that you might want. So those guys get really creative about making things, you know, like the everything people talk about like chef driven drinks or market driven drinks. It's like, to a large extent in Vancouver, it didn't happen because, like, oh, hey, we have access to all these ingredients, we should make drinks of them. It was
out of necessity.
Right. It's like, yeah, holy crap, how do I, you know, get close to replicating that flavor? You know,
it's like a 12 bottle bar,
right?
Like that whole idea. It's like making something interesting out of like the most stripped down. What, that's 12 bottles is, you can do so much, man.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, like making something creative and new and inspired,
right,
out of like a very minimal selection of ingredients. Mm-hmm.
And that whole thing of like, you know, making ingredients and trying to replicate, look, you know, different liqueurs or different bitters or things like that, kind of, and also with like everyone kind of going a little crazy for a little while, like, oh, we make everything in house.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Why? It's like, please, you know, it gets to the point, it's just like, I talk about this all the time. It's like, it's just time management. It's like, how much time do you have, or how much money do you have to pay someone on staff to make this for you? And is it honestly actually better than what you can buy commercially now?
Yeah.
You know?
You're not going to reinvent chartreuse.
God, no. I see people try.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's a fun project.
Right.
But also, it goes back to time management. I'm like, really? Is it worth it?
Exactly.
When this person has perfected this whole system in production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and especially, you know, when it comes to things like certain syrups, you know, it's like, why are you making your own orgeat? Like, that's one. It's like, some people...
A friend of mine makes orgeat. Right. It's totally killer.
Right. But I have to say that's kind of the exception. You know, it's like, I will say that 9 out of 10 times, if you make something like orgeat on your own, like, you're not necessarily making something better or more consistent. Because that's the other thing too. It's like, consistency is hard.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so, okay, are you as consistent? And do you keep up that same level of quality?
Sure, sure. I mean, like, but even, like, one of my favorite drinks of all time, Fernet Branca, is inconsistent.
Right.
Sometimes you get a really hot bottle. Sometimes it's, like, super minty. I mean, mm-hmm. like... And that also, as a bartender, it's like, you should always, like, you should constantly be revisiting your classics. You should taste all of your drinks just to make sure that they're, like, on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you make a dark and stormy.
Right.
You know, taste the ginger beer. Like, taste the lime. Like, you know, taste everything. You should taste everything. This is the only way you keep evolving and progressing through this craft, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. And, you know, I think it is important to kind of make everything once yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so like, okay, now I have an appreciation for it. Now I know what the process is. And knowing the process really helps you know what's going to happen when you put it into a drink,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then after that, then decide for yourself, like, do I need to keep making this? You know, am I actually doing a better job? Like, I will tell you right now, I'm never going to make my own falernum again. Because mine's okay, but...
Yeah, mine's okay too, but yeah, I'd probably rather go with John D. Taylor's.
Right. You know, that or like, you know, like Blair Reynolds. I mean, for me, it's easy to get because he's 3 hours down the highway.
Right.
You know? I mean, definitely these things, you know, or like when everyone started making, you know, 18,000 bitters, like, cool. I think it's very important to learn that process because part of that process teaches you about like flavor extraction.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know what that's going to do and the balance of how you have all these super intense flavors and how they're going to come together.
How you're going to handle
them. Right. You know,
just like when you have 1,000 screaming patrons at your bar, and mm-hmm. how are you going to handle all these things?
Exactly.
Totally. But yeah, like finding that harmony and like, especially with, like we're saying with homemade ingredients and even like with heavily produced ingredients with mm-hmm. the inconsistencies that you'll find from time to time. Yeah, it's all about finding harmony and like and And that's like keeping you on your toes.
Oh, no, for sure. And, you know, that's part of the fun of it, too. It's like, you know, we like tasting. We like sampling, you know, so.
I've been doing it this entire show.
Right. You know what? I've finally gotten to the point where, like, you know what? I think it might be time for a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, we're at the end of the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Fun. Thank you so much. And next time you're in town, man, please come back on the show.
Love to.
Love talking to you.
You too.
It's always a pleasure to see you. Rocky, I'm going to make it out to Seattle soon. I'm going to come see you.
God, I hope so. And then we'll take you on what we lovingly call a life march.
That sounds nicer than it probably is. Thank you so much. This has been The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. We got Rocky Yad in the studio, and we will see you next week. Cheers.
Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Yes, he's high.